Today's episode of the two-man power trip of wrestling is dedicated to the life, the memory, and the legacy of Mr. Lanny Poffo, a.k.a. The Genius.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Lanny Poffo. That means an awful lot. Not only can I prove I am, but you can't prove I'm not. I speak 11 languages. Escuchen, por favor. Santana comes from Mexico. Yo hablo más mejor. The French I speak is magnifique. They told me in Paris. My Italian's molto bene. I learned when I was 3. I speak Latin, Greek, and Russian, Hebrew, and Portuguese. I speak Swedish and Norwegian, and I'm learning Japanese. Aside from my intelligence, I'm cunning as a rat, and I shall put these attributes to use upon the mat. I remind the competition and every wrestling fan, behold, the genius Lanny Poffo, the world's smartest man.
joining us on the line tonight is the man we remember as the Poet Laureate of the WWF, a guy that when we think about the name The Genius, there's only one person that comes to mind. He, of course, is a former NWA Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion, a three-time ICW World Heavyweight Champion, a Gulf Coast Wrestling Tag Team Champion. And when you think of the last name Poffo, you think of nothing but greatness. And it's our pleasure to welcome in the one and only Leaping Lanny Poffo. Thank you so much for joining the two-man power trip of wrestling.
Well, thank you very much. And you may call me the genius if you like.
Well, the genius is always full of glory and renown. So if you allow me to call you the genius, I will do that until the cows come home.
Or call me Lanny. It's much easier. But either way.
Whatever you want, you're the boss. But I appreciate you coming on tonight, Lanny. It's really cool to get to talk to you, and we're here to talk about the Kickstarter comic book autobiography. And I got to tell you, this is one of these series that we've watched this develop over the last couple of years. And when you think about your story, you think about your family, I cannot wait to see the finished product. Tell us about this Kickstarter campaign and what we can expect with this comic book.
Well, a guy named John Crowther reached out to me, and he said that Nikolai Volkoff was already involved, and the Killer Bees, and, you know, Cat saw Jim Duggan, ho! So I thought, wow, that's pretty good company. I'd like to get involved in that. And this way I can tell my biography in comic book form. And I thought that was a very unpretentious thing to do. And it turns out the artists are so fantastic. And I'm really proud to be in it. They're going first class all the way. And very soon you can get a copy at geniuslannypoffo.com. But until that day, you can check it out by going into Squared Circle Comics in Facebook. And even though we've already achieved our Kickstart goals, there's still seven more days, and the fans can get some serious discounts.
What a cool way to kind of illustrate a biography, though, by putting it in a comic book form. And it's a media now that's probably almost as popular as it's ever been. And obviously, professional wrestling being as much of a spectacle and as colorful as it is, comic books almost seem like they're the best marriage. I know it's been attempted by all the big promotions to have a comic book, but to tell a story, an autobiography, when hearing that on paper, does it strike you as interesting that how are we going to move a life story into an actual comic book?
Yeah, the thing is, you know, I started out as a boy, and I don't know if you believe in God or coincidence, but you'll never guess who he threw into my life. Shel Silverstein. Have you heard of that man?
Oh, absolutely.
Where the Sidewalk Ends, The Light in the Attic, Falling Up, and also he wrote some songs for Johnny Cash, including A Boy Named Sue, and he wrote the Unicorn song, The Loveliest of All Was the Unicorn. Now the fans know something else I can't do. So anyway, I met him twice in my life, and he inspired me to write poetry myself. And, you know, unfortunately, he died in 1999, so I was unable to say, hey, thanks for inspiring me. Here's a book that was just published, Limericks from the Heart and Lungs. And it would have made him very happy. Unfortunately, you know, he passed away before the book became published. But what a fantastic man. And how lucky I am to have been influenced by him.
Shel Silverstein, an absolute staple of, you know, at least for John and I being in our mid-30s, the elementary school days, Shel Silverstein was what we were taught when you got to the poetry side of your learning. But I got to be honest with you, and this is being exposed to wrestling for the first time in 1987 and being a kid 5, 6, 7 years old, when I thought of poetry, and this is not blowing smoke up anybody's rear end here, I thought of Leaping Lanny Poffo because it became such a staple of our Saturday mornings to hear your poems before your matches that somebody like us, John and myself, growing up, we think of poetry, we're wrestling fans, we think of Lanny Poffo.
Wow, that makes me feel very good. I'm 63 years old now, and, you know, anytime I can have a sense of self-importance, it's good for the ego.
Oh, it's trust me, it's quite the event just to talk to you, because I mean, I don't even have this written down, but the first wrestling event that I ever watched was the Saturday night's main event that pitted Hogan and Andre for the first time in the Battle Royal, and who's the first guy that I see get taken out but you by a vicious headbutt by Andre the Giant, the Crimson Mask, the whole nine yards. So we're tied at the hip here, Lanny, from the jump start of watching wrestling. That was the first image that I can remember.
Yeah, if I can remember, you know, they needed a special thing to get Andre over as a villain, because he was like the most popular wrestler that ever lived. And then they put him with Bobby Heenan, but they wanted to do one toke over the line. So they asked me to do that very special thing for Andre. And I was happy to do it. And then I was also, well, a little bit, I must say, I'm a human being. I have feelings. And I was very, very disappointed when I was not invited to be in WrestleMania 3. Instead, I was just the sacrificial lamb. But I do believe I've gotten revenge.
Yeah, it's still, if you go back and watch it now, it's still brutal because, I mean, the way the stretcher comes out and you are just absolutely curled up and you see the blood trickling out. I mean, obviously, you were selected to be the guy. I mean, this is national TV. This is Saturday night's main event. Did you really feel that to be a big task that was asked by you, asked by the boss to you to do something like that on such a grand scale?
Yes, and I felt like, you know, you meet a, must have been like a girl that puts out on the first date and then doesn't get a phone call.
Oh man, it's so cool. I mean, I just to think about that moment and think about all the characters and all the people that we grew up watching, and then I'm looking at the comic book and I'm looking at all the illustrations, and it's very easy to bring a lot of those characters to life. So when you got to see the illustrations, being a poet and an aficionado of the literary world, were you taken by the illustrations? Did you see those coming to life in the way they did? Because they are quite fascinating.
Well, I had an opportunity to meet some of the artists, and I had a chance to tell them how fantastic I felt that they were. You know, I had some very high expectations, and they were all met and exceeded by the greatest artists I've ever seen in the world of comics.
You're just seeing your robe, the way it's brought to life, just seeing your facial expressions, the way it's brought to life. The artists who were involved in this project really just they did a stellar job. And when you scroll through the Kickstarter page, which you can get to at Kickstarter.com, you can see some of the illustrated pages, and you can see how details of your life are just brought to life by these great artists. And I guess if there's anything that I could ask you about the actual comic book itself, not just your story, but the comic book, was there something that you just were taken by, thinking, wow, this is so cool that I'm seeing this now brought to life through the eyes of a comic book?
Well, I actually looked at the physique that they drew on me, and I said, I will never live up to those shoulders and abs.
And like I said, yeah, take a look at it. You'll see just how detailed and how really cool it is. But even the, you know, just the training and seeing you, you know, as you're starting to grow up. I mean, you're literally seeing your life before your eyes in a comic book. Were you a comic book fan growing up?
My favorite comic book was Spider-Man because of the smart remarks he would make.
How ironic that your brother would end up in a Spider-Man movie. That's quite the irony.
Well, here's the real irony. When he was wrestling for Eddie Graham in Florida while he was playing baseball, in the wintertime, he would wear a mask and call himself Spider-Man. And then 40 years later, he's got a starring role in the movie.
Crazy, and quite a crazy coincidence. And yeah, kind of speaking of your brother, obviously the Macho Man, one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time, being in the Poffo family, obviously your father's a legendary wrestler as well. Did your father always want to get you both into the wrestling business? Was that a part of the grand scheme?
That was the fallback thing. We were trying to make it as baseball players. And then, of course, Randy was better than me at baseball and wrestling. And so he finally signed in 1971 with the St. Louis Cardinals. He was finally released in 1975 from the Chicago White Sox, and he got into wrestling, and I was amazed. He took to it like a fish to water, and good for him. Baseball's loss was wrestling's gain. Ooh, yeah.
Very, very true. And, you know, the wrestling business is never quite the same, you know, it's, you know, since before he got there. Obviously, since he left, the business hasn't been the same. He's just had such a huge, huge impact on professional wrestling and us as fans. But, you know, speaking of you, you were pretty much a natural, and you kind of were a little bit different than what we were used to. And I think it was Rob Van Dam liked to talk about how he liked to adapt your athleticism and your style and some of the grace that you put into the business and some of the athletic moves. Were you always, you know, keen on being different as far as your wrestling style?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Rob Van Dam not only copied me, he surpassed me easily. But that's the way it is. Even the great athletes like the people, like in the Olympics, you know, they break a world record of any younger person in the next 4 years. You know, they surpass him. Of course, Usain Bolt is an anomaly. He won 3 in a row. So, yes, I believe that Rob Van Dam is 10 times the athlete that Leaping Lanny was.
Hey, don't take too much away from yourself, though. I mean, especially back in the day, your athleticism, agility.
What I said was true. If you want to put me over, let me just say this. I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, and I'm proud of all three of those. And that's where I stand head above heels of any of the wrestlers. And I'm trying my best to influence as many young people as I can to avoid the dangers of drugs. That's why I'm 63 and still look like I do.
Absolutely, and I just was thinking of the high flying and the agility and the athleticism back in the day that you had, but I was also thinking about Leaping Lanny, reading poems, throwing some frisbees. Was that kind of your idea to add in the poems and the frisbees and stuff when you were Leaping Lanny when you first got into the WWF?
Do you remember a TV show called TNT Tuesday Night Titans?
Yes.
Okay, I was a guest on TNT, and I knew that if I was boring, they would never invite me back. So I wore a suit of armor, and I did a poem. And Vince McMahon said, Lanny, that was great. From now on, you do a poem before every match. And I was so excited because I finally had a gimmick. And not only a gimmick, but it was legit. I actually write poetry, and I love to do it. And so then the Frisbees, I copied that from Al Costello. Are you familiar with that man?
Yes.
He was a tag team champion with Roy Hepperman in the Fabulous Kangaroos, and they used to throw cardboard boomerangs out to the audience. They used to come into the ring with a carved boomerang from an Aborigine, but of course you can't throw those to the audience because you'll kill somebody. But they threw the cardboard ones out. Two of the fans that used to go for those boomerangs were the Macho Man and I when we were just children. And so I thought, what a lot of excitement. So I said, what can I throw? I can't throw a boomerang because I'm not Australian. And I said, what can I throw that's going to get some traction? So I rolled up some scrolls and threw those out, and I didn't even make it into the first row. And then I decided, I've got it, Frisbees. I'll put a poem on a Frisbee, and then I'll write a poem on the inside of the Frisbee, recite the Frisbee, recite the poem, and throw them to the audience. And that's what caused all the hullabaloo. And then they started selling them at the arena. I would, after I would win, lose, or draw, I would sign them for the audience, and we would sell out every night of Frisbees. And we sold hundreds and thousands of Frisbees to the audience. And every once in a while, I run into a fan that still has a signed autographed Frisbee.
Those were very, very cool back in the day, and very cool to see Leaping Lanny turn into the genius. And I kind of just really like that heel turn because, you know, throwing the frisbees and reading the poems is good, you know, to kind of get over and establish yourself with a gimmick. But once you turn heel and really grasp that genius character, I felt like that was a turning point for you. And the crowd really, really, you know, hated you. And they hated when you started reading those poems. You wore the cap and gown to the ring. Was that heel turn? Was that kind of a little bit of your idea? Was that you putting in some of your twist to the genius character?
Well, I did everything I could to set myself up for success. And, of course, every town I went to, I did a little cheat sheet. I would find out what the sports were in that town, and I would write a nasty poem about their sports teams, which is, you know, if you go to a place like Omaha, Nebraska, you know, you say something against the Cornhuskers, that's all they've got is Cornhuskers. So that got me very unpopular over there. And the first poem that put me on the map was in Boston. And I said, my name is Lanny Popple. I always know what's up. The Bruins haven't got a chance to win the Stanley Cup. People went, the Red Sox haven't won in years. I hope they never do. The Celtics are a travesty. The Patriots are too. And I bet those fans would be very amazed to know that, you know, I don't really care about football. I don't. I'm going to watch the Super Bowl only because that's what people do, you know. But I have no money on the line and don't care who wins.
Now, pro wrestling's smartest man was, you know, a great gimmick to have. And like you said, like that cheap heel heat where you really got to the crowd and they would be infuriated. And, you know, then they kind of put you with Mr. Perfect, and that was just an awesome pairing. Can you just talk about a little bit the chemistry with you and Perfect when you were basically his executive consultant?
I'll tell you what, I love Mr. Perfect, Curt Hennig. I'm very, very sorry that he passed away. And in a 21-year career, I would say the 4 months that I spent with Curt Hennig and got to be a nemesis of, you know, whatever I was, you know, a piece of gum on the boot of Hulk Hogan, those 4 months were the greatest 4 months of my career. I got three main events in Madison Square Garden. We broke box office records in places like Los Angeles Sports Arena and the Myriad in Oklahoma City. I don't think they call it that anymore, but they keep changing the names and demolishing buildings. That's how I know I'm getting older. And Mr. Perfect, Curt Hennig, was the consummate professional. And I'm very sorry that he passed away too soon.
You guys were such a great pairing, and you guys, when you destroyed Hogan's WWF title back then, that was a complete shocker. And then for the fact that you actually have a victory over Hulk Hogan was a big shock. So you said that was a great moment in your career. Does that hold up for you over time? You know, those kind of memories where, you know, you're beating the Hulkster, who's the number one guy, you're destroying the title belt?
Well, if you go on geniuslannypopple.com, you will find that I've got selective amnesia over my career. Those are the only great moments that I want to remember.
I got you. And, you know, at that point in time, it was just so great with you and Perfect. And it definitely felt like a longer period of time. Maybe it's the fan in me. I felt like it was even longer than those 4 months that you said. It felt like you and Perfect were together for a while. But I guess that's just the staying power in our minds as fans, that you and Perfect had that awesome chemistry.
Right. It all ended at WrestleMania six. And then, you know, and then I got faded out, and that's what happens. You know, it's like one is in jail, the other is just visiting. I was just visiting. You know, it's like the bum of the month club, you know, but it was my turn, and it was fantastic. And I drank from the silver chalice of success for one brief shining moment, and it was all worth it.
Was a great run, though, and that's pretty much what a lot of fans consider the golden era of the WWF. Would you agree at that period that those were the larger-than-life characters? Those were the, you know, really the guys that the fans remember more than anything?
Well, I don't want to be one of those old-timers that knock the stars today. I mean, they're trying to make a living, too. and hopefully a fortune. And they risked their lives every night. The only advantage that we had over them is we didn't have writers, and they did. Once you have writers, that kind of, how are you going to have a personality like Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Macho Man Randy Savage, Jake the Snake Roberts, Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig? We didn't use writers. We did it ourselves. And until they start firing the writers, they're never going to have the personalities, because it's going to sound like people reading, you know, and that's what they're doing. They are reading. They're memorizing lines and reading, and it's just too cookie cutter. They are great athletes. They deserve to make a living and a fortune. It's just that they are handcuffed by the cookie cutter.
You know, you and your brother, and obviously your dad, had amazing physiques, and your dad held records for the fact that he could, the most crunches, Guinness Book of Records for crunches, but you still managed to keep yourself in good shape. I mean, is that something that has just been ingrained from the beginning of your life, that fitness and taking care of yourself? Because I guess your body's your vessel. Has that always been something that was brought to you from when you were such a little kid?
Well, first of all, my dad was not in the Guinness Book of World Records. He was in Ripley's, Believe It or Not.
Ripley's, sorry.
And it wasn't crunches. It was Navy sit-ups with the hands held behind his neck. And he did 6,033 consecutive sit-ups in 4 hours and 10 minutes legitimately. And he was always a physical fitness, taking it a step further. I'm into intermittent fasting, prolonged fasting, and I live on a diet of greens, onions, mushrooms, beans, berries, and seeds. Very little cheating, except when I'm on the road. And intermittent fasting, I skip breakfast, I skip lunch, and my first meal is at around 3 p.m. every day, because I don't want to live 100 years. I'm trying to live indefinitely. I want to prove to the world that what can happen when we live every moment conscientiously.
And what did you attribute to how athletic you were during your active days? Was it cardio, or was it just a steady, steady diet, and also just a regular, workout that you kept consistent?
Well, I believe what you are is God's gift to you, and what you make of yourself is your gift to God. So I was blessed with a very good physique, and I did the best with what I had. Of course, when I say very good physique, I went into the locker room, and there's the Ultimate Warrior, there's Hulk Hogan, there's Warlord, there's Barbarian, and, you know, my physique that I was blessed with seems a little bit anemic compared to these people. But I worked with what I had, and I did my very best, and when I run into fans like you that remember me, it makes me feel, you know, all worthwhile, that all my hard work was worthwhile.
Is there anybody that you would look at post-retirement for you that you could say their body of work would be similar to yours in the ring? Is there anyone that you've seen that you're like, you know what, if I could lace up the boots in my prime, I'd pick this one guy to be my opponent?
Well, I would say there's so many people that I don't want to slight anybody, but I would say Chris Jericho, with his interviews, his baby face, his heel, everything he did was tremendous entertainment for the fans. And I really respected him, and I felt if I was in my prime, perhaps I could have a good match with him. Let's put it this way. If I couldn't, I'd be the first guy that couldn't.
And as we hit the wind down, start to wind it down here, you've had such a great career. If you really look back and really focus in on not just WWF days, you look back at all the territories you kind of went through, all territories you ran through, you know, Mid-South, you know, whether it be Memphis, over there CWA, all the many, many places you went. I always think of ICW, which was your father's promotion, and obviously Angelo was a big part of it, and so were you and Randy, and I just always think, do you have any favorite moments looking back at that promotion? Because I feel like it's a lost territory where a lot of fans can't find footage, or, you know, pretty much any footage of some of the great legendary things that happened there.
I would say being tag team partners with George Weingaroff, and we're still friends today. He lived in Nashville, and, you know, everything. I had a lot of good times there. Ronnie Garvin, a lot of fun. He was fun on the road. You know, we had some good times. So it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us. I'm doing a little bit of waxing rhapsodic there. It was, and a lot of great stars were there. Bob Orton Jr., Bob Roop, Ronnie Garvin, you know, Crusher Broomfield, who became One Man Gang, and Akeem. So, you know, a lot of great stars passed through the ICW.
Yeah, to say the absolute least. With the footage, though, is there any footage still left, or who owns it, or whatever happened to, you know, that basically a legendary footage of all those guys kind of coming through?
All the footage is gone. Everything is gone. Whatever you see on YouTube is the is what made it through.
Kind of a shame, because it's such an awesome territory. And obviously, if you're looking for some Randy Savage stuff, there's some great stuff kind of lost, I guess, in the archives throughout the history there. But looking back at your career, do you have some favorite matches, or maybe a match that sticks out more than others? Maybe not in ICW, but in other territories and other places that you've wrestled?
There's only one man smart enough to put Hulk Hogan down. The genius has a devastating plan. You're looking at the future World Wrestling Federation, who appeals to the modern thinking fan. When I emerge victorious with gold around my waist, I shall be the most splendiferous of all. Don't tell me Hulk is 6'8" and I'm just 6'2". Between the ears, I'm over 10 feet tall. He wants to wrap his 24-inch pythons around my neck and give his famous, "What you gonna do?" By the power of the genius and the world's smartest man, I'll rely on my incredible IQ.
That's unbelievable. That was fantastic. I mean, I won't give you a standing ovation right now, Lanny. That was awesome. Thank you so much for that. We gotta bring it back to the comic book on that note, because there's nothing else we're going to ask that's going to top that. That was awesome. But before we do the big plug for the Kickstarter, I just got to ask you, I usually finish it up with asking the wrestler what their legacy is in the business, what they look back on their career. But I got to ask it in terms of the Poffo name, the Poffo family. When the book is closed on professional wrestling, what do you think the fans will remember about the Poffo family?
Well, my brother once told me that he never wanted to slight the fans. He felt if he didn't give his 100% best performance, he's no better than a pickpocket or a shoplifter. And the fans paid their money, their hard-earned money, to see the show, and he made sure that the Macho Man was dressed to kill and wrestled to kill. And, you know, I was thinking how lucky I am to be the son of Angelo Poffo, and how lucky I am to be the brother of the Macho Man. Otherwise, I wouldn't even be important enough to talk to right now. Getting your foot in the door is the most important thing in the world. And that's who got our foot in the door, my father and my brother. And I just hope I was worthy of being in the ring to entertain the fans for the time that I did.
It's an unbelievable story, and you can get on over to Kickstarter.com. The name of the comic is The Genius Lanny Poffo, Wrestling's Smartest Man. I mean, just to read it, just to see your story illustrated is quite unbelievable. And, Lanny, I'm going to hand it over to you if you can. Please share with the listeners of the Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling just anywhere else they can get information about the book, as well as follow anything and everything going on in the world of The Genius Leaping Lanny Poffo.
Well, I'm not quite sure. It's on my Facebook account. It's on my Twitter. But look at Squared Circle Comics, and you'll get all the information that you need.
And you can't beat that. And Lanny, we really appreciate you coming on. This is an absolute thrill. And you're one of the all-time favorites of the Two-Man Power Trip, so we can't thank you enough.
I appreciate you guys, and thank you for being very well informed so you could give a good interview.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.
Much.
please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.